girlfriends this week actually posted, I think on the unofficial Kathy and Judy page, the whole song of this. And this is just a teensy tiny rejoin or whatever you want to call it. But it's by a Christian
Phoenix.
Phoenix. I was going to say aerosol.
I love that group.
Close, right.
Did they call them aerosol?
What?
Oh, I thought, you said Arizona.
Right. So anyway, that's just a little detour. Hi.
Hi. So, there's two things that I want to introduce today, but I think I'd rather than the Man Book Club.
Okay,
right now,
we'll do that later.
I'd rather talk about the story I read 2 days ago about a 60-year-old. Now, listen to this.
All right.
The woman is 60 years old.
Okay.
Her 28-year-old daughter passed away from cancer. The daughter wasn't married. She had frozen her eggs, and she said,
"Oh my God!"
Dying wish was that her mother would
have a grandchild,
have what would otherwise be called a grandchild, and raise it with what would otherwise be the grandfather. And the woman wants to do it. I think. So there's a big problem because the eggs live in England and the grandmother lives in America. So there was a ruling that said the eggs can't come over here. I don't know if
the mother has to go over to get them.
Whatever. But I just think when I was 60, if my daughter, God forbid, do Gentiles have to say that before they say something like passed away?
Some people do.
Okay. God forbid were to pass away.
It's like the good luck thing is like the knock wood. Right. So if I say that, it won't happen.
Right. So do you know what I learned about that? Or did I learn it on our show?
What? What did you learn about that?
Where was I? Oh, I know. I was in French class. So when you knock on wood, mm-hmm. You're basically supposedly knocking on the cross.
Really? Hadn't heard that one.
Well, think of all us Jewish people who've been knocking on.
Imagine your surprise.
I know, and there's no take back. Okay, so anyway, that I think were that, God forbid, to have happened to my daughter and that were her dying wish.
You would have said, sorry, honey.
I would have said, I can't do that.
Right.
I think it's more than I could handle.
Okay, so what happened with the 60-year-old woman?
Well, the 60-year-old woman is awaiting
a ruling
on whether or not the eggs can come here or she can go there or however it goes. And I just wondered what people thought about that.
And whether or not they would do it?
Whether you would do it or whether or not that'd be an easy thing to ask your mother or whether or not there's, safety things. If it feels terrible to say no, that you'd say yes in spite of feeling no. Just how you are reacting to it.
I certainly have seen stories about middle-aged mothers carrying a child for their daughter who had to have a hysterectomy or for some reason couldn't carry a child. I can see if you're 45 or something and you go, what the heck,
Well, the daughter's going to raise it. The daughter's going to raise it.
Right. Carry the baby so your daughter can have her own child. Right.
Right.
I've read stories about that. And that seems drastic but doable. 60 years old? I mean, can a 60-year-old uterus even hang on to a baby? I mean, I know that a 60...
Well, there are plenty of people's uteruses that I know that probably couldn't.
Right. I mean, I know that the reason a 60-year-old woman can't conceive a child is because she's no longer producing eggs, correct?
Right.
So she can't conceive her own child. But the body, I don't know, technically and medically.
Can you imagine the uterus saying, here comes this egg with a sperm attached?
Oh, you mean a brain?
Yeah. What the heck?
Where did this come from?
Right.
There goes the neighborhood, right?
I feel like that's kind of selfish of her to ask her mom to do. I mean,
especially on her deathbed.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Talk about manipulation.
Because you've got such leverage.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
You've got deathbed leverage.
The mom can say, sure, honey, I will do that.
And then not?
I mean, how would she know?
Yeah,
she died.
Exactly.
Oh, the mom would... How
that
can
would
you
be bad? What?
And that's like starting your life over, though, to raise a child when you're 60
exactly.
from birth. Like you're retired and or into
right.
retirement.
312-981-7200.
Where do you weigh in on this? Just
can we also do the deathbed wishes detour? Because number one, why would you ask somebody on your deathbed to do something that you hadn't discussed with them while you're well?
Okay, maybe she was in marketing because she said to her mother, "Because you did such a great job raising us."
Oh God!
Manipulate-o-rama.
Right. So we want you to weigh in at 981-7200 where you stand on this sort of astonishing issue, which is in fact going on right now.
312-981-7200.
My wife is now my mother's mother, and it makes me blue because although she is my wife, she's my grandmother too.
Oh yeah,
there
this
you
is
go.
This is an old Bob Collins favorite. This is the story of a 60-year-old woman who her dying daughter, who was asked by her dying daughter to have the frozen eggs of the daughter. Implanted in her with an anonymous sperm and then have her raise what would have been her granddaughter. And this is Kim. Hey, Kim.
Hi. I think this woman just needs to tell her daughter, like you and
she's dead.
Well, she should have said to her daughter, like we've all said to our children so many times, just because you can do something doesn't mean it's right.
Okay, well, I think that sing-songy way of saying it would probably be not so good with the dying girl, but I agree with you.
Right.
Totally.
Just because it's physically possible doesn't mean that it's something you should do. How do you feel about the deathbed part of it, Kim?
Well, I think that maybe the woman might have thought about it before and didn't have the nerve to ask her mom until the last minute when she felt like, you know, she was so overly emotional. Maybe that's why it came out at that time. I don't know.
Would you ever lie to somebody about a deathbed wish? If is your
as
are your parents
suggested?
Are your parents still living?
My mom is.
Okay. Well, I hate to do it with it. If your dad had expressed a dying wish that you knew you just were not going to be able to fulfill, but you knew it would give him comfort as he lay dying.
Keep my car in running condition
right.
at all times
exactly.
for the rest of your life.
Right. Would you say to somebody who was dying, okay, don't worry about it, Dad. Okay, I'll do that.
I probably would have said, Dad, I'll do my best.
Ah, there you go.
Are you in public relations?
No, I'm just kind of a fibber.
I'll do my best. Here's a question. What's the difference between a fib and a lie?
A lie is to do something to benefit yourself. A fib is to do something not to hurt somebody else's feelings.
Oh, wow. Like, no,
so clearly
sister.
You've thought about this.
Yeah. No, that dress doesn't make you look fat.
Right, you don't exactly say that it makes you look fat. You say, you know what dress I really like is that blue one you had. I love you every time you wear that blue dress.
Right, the one that doesn't make you look fat.
As fat as you actually are.
Right,
exactly. Or should you say, yes, your husband does look just like Ryan Reynolds. Like a fib?
Yeah,
Kristen, you are so playing with fire.
Yeah, that could be a fib. Or you can say, yeah, I can see it. I really can see Ryan Reynolds in him, you know.
Okay.
Nose and a mouth, right?
All right. The difference between a lie and a fib, Kim just clarified that.
What I like about you, Kim, aside from everything that I've heard so far, what I like about you is that you had given this thought and you were prepared with a definition, whereas if someone were to have posed the question I posed to you, what's the difference between a fib and a lie?
Most people wouldn't.
When you're known to be a fibber, people don't really take what you say for you know, they always second guess what you're saying, too. Because, like I said, I'm kind of notorious within my family as being a fibber. And so when I say something,
you're the one question me.
Do you mean this? Do you mean that? Do you mean this? Then they kind of sometimes they can back
getting to
forward.
Know you, Kim.
You're the one they always go to with the question, does this dress make me look fat?
Yeah.
Because they know you'll never say yes.
Or when the kids ask really hard questions, you know, like, well, you know, how come, like, you know, little kids ask why people are gay, or how come people, you know, how do you have a baby, or just things that little 3-year-olds don't really need to know about. They go ask Aunt Kim, because I come up with a...
Okay, so I'm the 4-year-old kid. Aunt Kim, how come Uncle Lewis lives with his friend Marcus?
Well, Uncle Lewis and Marcus seem to have a lot in common, and they've been friends for a long time. And they have so much in common and get along so well that that's why they want to live together.
Is that why they sleep in a twin bed?
Maybe they can't afford any other furniture. I don't know.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Okay, Kim, so the 9-year-old comes to you and says, "Aunt Kim, how come Uncle Lewis and Marcus live together and sleep in the same bed?"
Well, then you're a little bit more honest, and you tell them that that's just a choice that they've made. And, you know, maybe they had girlfriends before, maybe they didn't. Maybe they just get along better with each other. Sometimes that's the way the world is.
Okay.
You know? And when do you give the straight answer?
Yeah, at what age do you say?
The world according to Kim. This is good.
About the time they start dating themselves, you know, when they themselves are starting to choose to whether to ask a girl or a boy out on a date or something, you know, and you just talk more specifics and more.
Okay, so the four. Here we go. Here's the new scenario. The 14-year-old boy comes to you and says, "Aunt Kim, it's the first dance, and all my guy friends are asking girls, but I really like Kenny from my soccer team, and I want to ask Kenny to the dance." Then what do you say?
Well, by the time they're 14 nowadays, other kids have already. It's getting popular to be bisexual and gay, actually, in some of the schools. So they've already heard about it and talked about it. And, you know, I would just talk to them about saying, you know, some people truly feel this way in their heart. Other people might be just curious about it.
I think that's true.
Sometimes in the society, like everything we do, there's people have their opinions about it, and you have to live with that. So if that's truly how you feel, I just want you to know that it's a hard life to defend, because there's going to be a lot of people picking on you all the time. So if you think about it long and hard, and that's what you want to do, you know, that's...
Wait, I've got one.
Yep.
Aunt okay. Kim, how come Uncle Roger turned into Aunt Rachel?
Oh, that's a hard one.
Oh, the feature is called Ask Aunt Kim. You're the best, Kim. Thanks for being such
a
good sport.
Let's give her our prize.
What's our prize? I don't have a prize list.
Do we always have Lou Malnati's for
like 25? Do you have a prize list? Go ahead, Kristen. You can give her the prize. Kristen, Aunt Kristen's going to give you a prize.
Kim,
great.
Are you gluten-free by chance?
Gluten-free. No, but my best friend's the whole family is.
Okay, well, fabulous, because we have a Sweet Allie's gluten-free bakery sample. And even if you aren't gluten-free, it's still delicious.
It really is. I've had her stuff, yeah.
So you get a variety of sweet and savory treats from the only dedicated and certified gluten-free bakery in Chicagoland. You can visit them online at sweetallies, that's ALIS.com. So if you just stay on hold, or stay on the line, I'll get your information when we go to commercial.
That's awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, Kim. Thanks a lot.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down where life I'm fighting.
Was interesting this week for those of us of a certain generation who recall Olivia de Havilland in... Gone with the Wind, and other roles, but Melanie in Gone with the Wind, the perfect passive wife, perfect passive Southern wife. And it turns out that, and this has been no secret, that she and her sister, Joan Fontaine, had a lifelong feud. They apparently fought with each other.
Olivia de Havilland.
Olivia de Havilland and Joan Fontaine. Their whole lives. And Joan Fontaine died... I want to say in the 90s, and they still were fighting. Apparently the reasons for their fights
remain unknown.
Well, yeah, one person in one of the comments said something about that throughout their lives, de Havilland had requested or asked for money from her more successful sister, Joan Fontaine, and Joan Fontaine had apparently always said, okay, here's money. And that was one of the reasons. But
she gave her the money, so why would they fight?
Well, she resented it. Joan Fontaine resented it.
Didn't Joan get the Oscar before
the Olivia did, right? Yeah. They were both nominated the same year. The same year that Olivia de Havilland was nominated for Gone with the Wind, Joan Fontaine was, I can't remember. Anyway, so it just made me think, we hear about sister fights, and I wonder if there's as many brother fights. Do men tend to
not speak to someone? Or their...
Right, or to have ongoing, lifelong... I mean, I've talked over the last several years about my relationship with my sisters and my brother. We're crazy about each other. We laugh because whenever we post a picture of the five of us, we always say it's five old people with the same face. But we really, even though there are little things about each other that annoy each other, it's not worth fighting about. And it's hard for me to imagine being angry until death to one of my sisters.
But, I think there's a thing with men that the I'm not speaking to him, whether it be a friend and or a brother, is just less likely of a place to retreat to. I know one man who is not speaking to a friend.
Yes,
but I've never heard of that before. Oh, yes, I do. I have.
Okay, men or women?
Two men.
Okay, 312-981-7200. And I remember some time ago, I'm trying to remember which columnist it was. It might have been Jack Mabley or some Tribune columnist wrote a column about going to the funeral of someone that you hadn't spoken to in years. And what a waste, what a sadness, what a shanda that was to go to somebody's funeral if you hadn't made an attempt to mend fences with them before they died.
Do you remember when we would hear that from some, and so I haven't spoken to her in so many years, mm-hmm. and I would always ask, would you go to her funeral?
Okay.
And most people said yes.
Yeah, exactly. So the time that it takes to get dressed up and go to a funeral is considerably more than the time it takes to pick up the phone or go on email or Facebook and say, look it, I hate this. Who cares who's right or who's wrong? We used to have something really good. Let's do that. Let's go back to that.
There are people who are fueled and nurtured by anger, though.
Yeah, that may be true. Yeah. 312-981-7200. Call us or text us and tell us either about your personal feud with a brother or sister and what's up with that.
How long it's lasted and do you want it to be over?
Right.
Or have you considered saying I'm sorry?
This is Vince. Hey, Vince.
Yes, I have two stories.
Okay.
I have brothers that are twins, and they were good all their life until the last 3 years. They never spoke, were not speaking 3 years before the one brother died.
What happened?
And they were not speaking.
What happened?
I don't know. It was just they were in business together, and one was always the good guy and one the bad guy. And then I have a brother-in-law who has a twin. They never spoke for years, and one is still alive. The other one died, and he never went to his brother's funeral or anything.
But you don't know what the base of that anger was about.
It was over in the case of the brother-in-law. It was over the wives.
Details.
Yeah.
That the wives didn't get along.
Yeah, the wives did not get along. And so, therefore, they would never have anything to do with each other. And then when the one brother-in-law died, a man died, the wife never even told the other brother-in-law.
Oh, my God.
That he had died.
And it was his twin.
Oh, my goodness. Yep. Oh, my goodness.
And in my brother's case, The one came for the funeral, but to this day he regrets they had not been speaking the last 3 years.
How bad?
It's a little too late.
That's
mister.
What we're talking so that, about, Vince.
I say I don't believe in running to a deathbed.
In what?
You don't believe in running to a deathbed?
I don't believe in running to a deathbed.
Therefore, what does that mean? If you weren't talking to somebody, you wouldn't go to their funeral.
No.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't either. Thank you, Vince.
I like your show.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
This from the text line. I would rather talk to a doorknob than talk to either one of my two brothers. And when my parents are gone, I will never talk to them again except to go piss on their graves. Okay. This is Lisa.
Hi, ladies.
Hi. Hi, Lisa. All right.
Boy, this just brought up a horrid memory for me. 20 years ago, somebody that I had literally known since I was 6 months old. She was my babysitter, became like an older sister to me, got me into the profession that I was in. She and I had had a falling out and really didn't speak for the last 5 years of her life. And I was getting married and thought, I cannot get married without this person in my life. She meant too much to me. I needed to end this. And I really didn't know why it was. She just kind of disappeared out of my life, and that was that. And I woke up one morning on a Monday, and I called the office that she worked at to talk to her. And all of a sudden, the main boss got on the line and said, Lisa, she died this morning.
Ew. Oh, my God, Lisa.
What was the fight about?
I have no clue. I really don't. She just got things in her mind, and it had never affected me, but she would just cut people out of her life. And, you know, at this point, I was 29 years old and really hadn't spoken with her from the time I was 25.
Uh-huh.
So, but, I mean, this was a person who, I mean, let's face it. I mean, she gave me my first Kotex, you know what I mean?
Well, that's a bond.
You know, I mean, she was the person that I went to, you know, uh-huh. for everything in my life. She was only 10 years older than me, but she was like another mother to me, a big sister. She was the world to me. And not having her in my life was very difficult, and that's why I made the decision that day to call her.
And, wow.
Yeah.
So what happened? So did you go to her service?
Absolutely. I went to the services. You know, I mean, her family had been my family. We lived down the street from each other, you know. It was hard. It was really hard because I was looking at a person that I needed to say a lot of things to and couldn't.
And what would you have said if you had gotten a hold of her before she inconsiderately died? What would you have said?
I love you and I miss you. And I need you in my life. I need you here to be with me on this amazing, momentous occasion.
And then would you say, I'm sorry for whatever split us up? Or I don't know what it was?
I would have said, whatever it is, you know, forgive me, Alfred, whatever it is. I don't know what I did, but please let it go away, you know? Just let bygones be bygones. It's too important.
Lisa, I'm not hearing the word sorry. It's hard to say.
Well, it is hard to say, but I guess the thing is I would have asked for forgiveness more than I would have said I'm sorry because I didn't do anything that I knew of to be sorry for. It could have been her perception.
Mm-hmm.
Which was not uncommon for her.
Mm-hmm.
And she was a very loving, giving person, sometimes on her own terms, if that makes sense to you.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's hard to settle a long-running issue unless both parties are willing to say, you know what, I'm sorry.
Both parties need to be alive.
Both parties, yeah, have to be alive and have to be able to say, you know what, I'm sorry.
And there were never any harsh words ever mentioned between us.
Right.
She just literally
just happens.
Disappeared.
People slip away. Right. Exactly.
And it was very quick. You know, it was just, I don't know. But anyway, that was 20 years ago.
That's the kind of thing we're talking about. Yeah. Lisa, we appreciate your call.
Thank you, ladies. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye.
We'll be back with more of your calls and texts at 312-981-7200.
What's happening, brother? Yeah. What's happening?
We're talking about the lifelong feud between Olivia de Havilland and her sister, also an actress, Joan Fontaine. And I wondered if there are brothers who often have the same kinds of issues that sisters do. One of our texters says, my brother and I used to hate each other, but then we got a younger brother and everyone started to hate him instead. We put our differences aside and learned to coexist through our hatred of the youngest. So I guess that's one way to resolve your issues. This is Ron. Hey, Ron, what's your situation with your brothers?
I want you to know you're interrupting my trip to Princeton, Illinois. So,
oh, I'm sorry. Please, where are you, on 80?
No, I'm sitting by a water tower in Oswego trying to get to 71.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt your trip, but we're glad you called. You and your brothers, not so much.
I have two brothers and two sisters. I'm from outside of Milwaukee, live in Oswego now. And basically, I wish them a happy birthday. I call them every year, the two brothers and the one sister. The other sister I've given up on, and she's probably given up on me.
So
you have relationships with four of your four siblings.
Four of my four siblings? Three of my four siblings. I call, as I said, on their birthdays.
Right, I know.
On their birthdays and say, hi, it's Ron, happy birthday.
Amen.
Why are you mad at them?
I'm not. Basically, I'm the oldest. I'm 70. The youngest is my youngest sister, who's 14, 15 years younger than me. She's the one that I don't call anymore. After calling a number of years and not hearing from her, she's the one that has three kids, and the oldest just got married in Jacksonville, Florida, and I didn't know anything about it until after the
Well,
ceremony.
You hadn't talked to her.
Right.
Well, that's true, but I've talked to the other two brothers and
doesn't
the sister. And to the 100-year-old aunt, and the 100-year-old aunt tries to tell me things, but sometimes I'm not sure if they're correct or not.
Okay, Ron, I want you to role play with me. You are your sister, okay? And I want your sister that didn't invite you to the wedding, correct?
Correct.
I want you to get in her head and finish this sentence for me. I am so mad at Ron because...
he's a pain in the ass.
Okay, there you go. That's $150 for the therapy bill.
No, we're charging $200 this week.
Oh, that's
$200.
Okay, right. Why? Can you tell me why Ron's a pain in the ass?
Well, he's the oldest.
Okay.
He's a leader. He's a leader.
Mm-hmm.
He changed from being a Methodist to a Catholic because of a gal up in Oshkosh in 2012. I talked to Steve about this yesterday morning.
Your sister talked to Steve?
No, I did.
No, okay.
Oh,
you're being your sister. We want you being your sister.
Sorry.
Okay.
Well, no, she didn't talk to Steve yesterday. I did.
Okay. Okay.
Do you think you are a pain in the ass?
Yes.
Okay, there you go.
Because I was going to say, Ron, I'm glad you drove safely and pulled over and everything, but you sound like there's potential to a certain amount of veracity in that statement.
Right, and pain in the acidness.
I find that I upset a lot of people.
Well, do you like that feeling? Do you care about that?
I do, but I don't understand why people get upset with me.
Well, I don't. Maybe you do. You said you're a pain in the ass. I mean, that's you're.
Don't you say, well, what is it about me that's
right.
pain in the ass like?
Does that feel good that people, that you alienate people? It's really nice to like people.
I've been such a pain in the ass for so long that I kind of enjoy it now.
Is there a Mrs. Ron?
Nah.
No.
She passed in 2009, and then
because she
did. She tell you were a pain in the ass too.
She was a saint.
Oh.
She was a saint.
Are you more of a pain in the ass since Mrs. Round died?
Yes.
Okay. And has becoming a Catholic helped you be less of a pain in the ass, even though you're more?
I love Catholicism, but I think it's probably made me more of a pain in the ass.
Ron, do you feel like you've gained a great deal of insight into yourself from your call to the Kathy and Judy show?
Yes, I have.
All right. We're glad you listen.
I feel we forced that answer upon you.
We're glad you listen, even though we think you're a little bit of a pain in the ass.
Well, let me tell you that when I saw Sandberg yesterday, I told her that she didn't belong on radio. She needs to be on TV.
Okay.
Ron,
well, we're kind of getting
this. I know. Did I meet you, Ron, at the remote yesterday? Did you tell me that my hair did not look like I used Ovation Cell Therapy?
That is correct.
You are a pain in the ass.
Thank you, Ron. Goodbye.
Thank you very much.
Just a little follow-up on our friend
Ron. It's an excellent follow-up.
Excellent follow-up. Kristen was out at the remote yesterday with Steve Cochran at Lyle Eyes in the Sky, and she asked on the air when we had Ron on the phone if he was the one that told her that it didn't look like she used Ovation Cell Therapy on her hair. And then he followed that up by taking her hand and asking her if she wanted to go out for a steak dinner. So we're all sort of agreed that Ron's self-perception is right on target. Right on target. Son Brad Thor is alive. The son is Brad Jr.
Correct.
And if the father stays alive when Brad Thor Jr. has a son and he names his son Brad Thor,
he's
Brad Thor the third. But it would be very unlikely that the original Brad Thor would still be alive when the next one's born. So there'll never be a four, technically.
Oh,
because when the father dies, Brad Thor Jr. becomes Brad Thor Sr.
Except people are living so long. But they're
not
having babies.
That's a long time, right? That's a long time to be living. Marilyn, thank you for the clarification on that.
I have to tell you one thing. Somebody on WGN interviewed Brad Thor, and he was absolutely delightfully funny. I believe he was on a Sunday morning.
It was probably Bob Surratt and Marianne Marciano, because I used to produce for them, and we had him on their show.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And he was really great.
He was a blast. Yeah, I thought he should have a gig with you guys.
Huh.
It's great to hear you.
Well, thanks, Marilyn. We appreciate the call.
Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Karen has a rather dark view of why there are men's book clubs. Hello, Karen.
I just think that the men's books club isn't really real. It's just an excuse for a bunch of guys to get together, drink beers. You know, a guy.
You are a dark,
dark
woman.
From Barnes & Noble and say, honey, this is for my book club. And then he sets it on the table for a week, doesn't bother with it, grabs it on the way to the club. Honey, I'm going to the club.
Karen, has it been rough?
Karen, where's Mr. Karen now?
Oh, no, there's no Mr. Karen.
Was there ever?
I'm just saying I'm pretty sure most of the guys don't even read the book or care about the book.
Oh, you know what?
Let me go somewhere and have some beer.
You know what? Actually, in reading this article that launched this conversation, and I read it about 3 months ago, but they were very serious. I mean, they'd go out and, you know, read reviews and try and put things into historical context. And I mean, I think most men, if they want to drink beer, you know, if they're developed men, if they want to drink beer, they can do it any time. And that they are definitely, I think an all men's book club would be really fun to listen in on.
Oh, I think all you just hear is slurping a beer.
Karen!
What's the opposite of misogynist?
Or sipping on whiskey.
What's the Brandy? Word for somebody who's misanthropic?
Feminist?
Well, that's a man to a woman about women.
Yeah. It's not misanthropic because
that's like that all the time.
That's
when
the whole
home
human
with their
race.
Families, I'm sure that they're you know, very caring and loving and wonderful people, and it's just like, okay, I want to get away from everybody and I want to just be with some buddies and drink
and pretend we're having a book club.
I just don't know where
I think
came
the word is
this,
misandry.
I do.
Is it misandry?
That sounds right, actually.
Kristen, can you look it up? It's like the male version of misogyny. It's sort of
anti-male,
right? Karen, now we're glad you were listening.
We're
glad we're women.
Yes.
Okay. Misandry, a hatred of men.
There you go. Okay. Misandry. Okay.
And when we come back, I'd like to hear the rules that you have in your book club, and whether or not it's all women or mixed. What are the rules? Do you have length of book rules? Do you have, you can't ever say, I like this book, I didn't like this book. You have to have something that has more substance. Because I'm not in a book club, so one reason is I don't like rules. So anyway, our number is, of course, 312-981-7200. What are the rules in your book club?
Just come and join the book club.
The men's book club.
And we are going to talk to an actual member of a men's book club. This is Jeff. Hi.
Hi.
So that must have pissed you off hearing, I believe it was Karen. Yeah, say that.
Let's say that there's parts of what she said that are true and parts that aren't.
Okay, well, clarify which is which and then tell us about your book club.
I drink wine mostly.
What? You drink wine?
Yeah. Rather than beer. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's beer there too, but most people drink wine. And two, we do discuss book clubs, or do discuss books. The books in the club.
What kind of books do you tend to read?
Well, the next six books we're reading are Me Before You.
Oh!
In a men's book club?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's and the person that picked it is kind of surprising he picked it, but the way we work is a moderator is picked, and he gets to choose whatever book he wants to do.
Okay, and then he leads the discussion?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. How many guys are in your club?
There's about 21, 22 members. There's usually typically 10 to 15 people at a discussion.
Okay, now finish the list of books you're coming up with, because Me Before You is being made into a movie. It's about...
It's a total girl book.
It's about a paraplegic and...
His caregiver.
Woman who takes care of him.
Guess what happens.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay.
I won't give it away. I'm halfway through it. My wife's read it, and she said it's interesting.
And how do you feel as a guy, Me Before You?
It's not a book I would have picked, but that's one of the reasons we're in a book club.
Okay, that's true. Okay, and what's the next book?
The Wright Brothers.
Well, that sounds good.
And then the third one is Thomas Jefferson and the Tripoli Pirates.
Okay, there we go. History, biography.
Dead Wake, The Last Crossing of the Lusitania.
Yeah, see, those are like, the only standout is Me Before You, which is a total women's book club book. Right.
Yeah, possibly. And
okay.
Then the fifth one is Tribe on Homecoming and Belonging. I have no idea what that one's about.
Tribe? Okay. Has any
guy gotten made fun of for his choice of the book club? Make fun of the guy that picked Me Before You? Like, what are you thinking?
No. Well, we pick at him in the meeting sometimes, depending if we like the book or not.
Mm-hmm.
And the last book for this year is going to be A Man Called Ove, if I mispronounce it.
Oh, yeah. I hear that.
That's wonderful.
And somebody said that Ron should read it. That apparently Ron is not unlike the main character in that book.
And I think they're making that into a movie, too.
Yeah, I think they are, too. Okay. All right.
The book we just finished was a book called The Brief History of Time by Geoffrey Hawking.
Geoffrey or
Stephen?
You mean Stephen Hawking, which is a really hard book.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's very scientific. Right.
It's physics.
Right.
Yeah. So, Anna, do you have any special rules? Beyond what you said, there's a person he picks, he moderates the conversation.
My wife didn't realize I was on the radio just now.
What, was she listening to the radio?
What'd she want to tell you? Did she want to tell you something?
No, you're talking about your book club on the radio. I said, no, I am.
Oh, that's great.
It's not my book club. We had a bunch of other people found it. It's been going for maybe 15 years now.
That's impressive. And what was the last book you suggested, Jeff?
Actually, I'm doing the Thomas Jefferson and the Tripoli Pirates.
Okay. That was your
I heard that's a really great one.
It was good. It's good.
Well, that's hardly
The rules are, we varied rules over the years. It used to be we'd vote on the book and, somebody would suggest book titles and we'd vote on the book title and that person that suggested would moderate it. And that got to be a long, painful process to agree on it.
Sure.
And we went to the suggestion of, all right, everybody's got to moderate once every so many months. Pick a book and moderate.
Do you meet monthly?
Yeah.
What's the food situation?
It varies from fairly elaborate to cheese and crackers.
And you meet at different homes every time?
Typically different homes, depending on some of the members now are older, so they're meeting in meeting rooms for their...
Assisted living?
Well, no. None of them are quite there yet.
But for their condo association?
Right.
Okay.
The book club age ranges from 50 or so, 35, 40, I think, is the youngest person. He doesn't show up all that often because he's got other commitments, to probably 75 or 80.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, that's great. Do you have a name?
Yeah, but I'm not going to give it out.
Okay.
It's not like the He-Man Woman Haters Club.
It's not like Geezer's Reed or anything.
No.
Okay.
It's a men's only club type of thing, but and it's we have kind of restricted membership because when we've actually been written up in a couple different articles when they talk about book clubs. And one of the interesting comments when we had been written up recently was I was talking with the lady that was doing the newspaper article. She was in the thing taking pictures and everything else. And I asked her what other book clubs she was doing. And she says, you're the only men's book club we've done. And I says, oh, what are the differences between us and the women's book clubs you've seen so far? And her comment was, you actually talk about the books.
That's true. There's a lot of gossip that can go on.
Jeff, you're a fan of Thomas Jefferson?
No more than anybody else's. I mean, we've read a fair amount of biographical stuff on the various different founding fathers and whatnot. We do a fair amount of history.
Well, I'm going to put you on hold, and I want to tell you about the Return of Teddy Roosevelt show that WGN and John Williams is putting
on. Familiar with it, and we haven't seen him yet, but we've heard him on John Williams' show.
Well, I think you should get tickets. You could go to our website, WGNradio.com/events, or you could call the Mac box office.
Sure.
But I'll give you more details offline.
All right. We'll put you on hold, Jeff. Thanks for your calls from the text line. One person says, in our book club, we don't all read the same book. We all come and just report on books that we've read, and it's more like a book report club.
I'd be confused.
I'm in a men's book group, and we read the classics, Dostoevsky, Faulkner, Melville, etc.
Oh, my God, I'd kill myself.
And John Grisham books, one says, Clive Cussler books, and others playing... Oh, this was about the Hill Street Blues theme. Anyway, we'll be back with the news after this.
I feel the earth move under my feet.
Southern California's section of the San Andreas Fault is, quote, locked, loaded, and ready to roll, according to a leading earthquake scientist. He said this Wednesday at the National Earthquake Conference in Long Beach. The San Andreas Fault is often referred to. It's one of the longest and most dangerous faults. The last big earthquake to strike the southern San Andreas Fault was in 1857. And it's been quiet then, according to the story, too quiet. This earthquake expert, Thomas Jordan, director of the Southern California Earthquake Center.
Okay, so he
does have some street cred, says the springs on the San Andreas system have been wound very, very tight. And the Southern San Andreas Fault in particular looks like it's locked, loaded, and ready to go. Would that affect anybody's decisions in terms of locating, of relocating, of moving?
It would affect mine.
Or of visiting?
It would affect mine for moving. I mean, there's a town in Northern California called Healdsburg that I just love, but it's earthquake territory.
Right.
Now I could get hit by a bus.
Sure, exactly. And certainly in terms of, we were talking before the show about the Istanbul airport attack, and we've been in, I wasn't talking to you about it, I was talking to somebody else about it, but we were in the Istanbul airport. Yeah, and Paris, we've been in Paris, I wouldn't base visiting on whether or not a terrorist attack had occurred someplace. I'm going in a week on a trip to Italy and the Mediterranean with my grandson, and you know, stuff could happen.
But you're not going to Rome. You're not going to a big city.
I'm going to be in Rome.
But are you going to be at Fiumicino? Are you going to
I'm going to be I'm flying into Fiumicino, and we're spending a day in Rome and at the Vatican. We're going to be right close to the Vatican.
Go-to spot.
Right. So I just am curious. 312-981-7200. The San Andreas fault warnings are more and more frequent. According to this story, scientists have observed that based on the movement of tectonic plates, earthquakes should be relieving about 16 feet of accumulated plate movement every 100 years. Yet the San Andreas has not relieved stress that has been building up for more than a century. And they're just talking about if you're in that area, you should be sort of... Yes. Yes, Miss Markey?
I
see your hand raised.
I have a question.
What?
If the head of the Tectonic Plate Association...
Of the Earthquake Center.
Right. Where's he flying to? Why is he staying there?
Well, he's the head of the National Southern California... Wait a minute. Let's see what he is. Director of the Southern California Earthquake Center. That's his job. He doesn't have a choice. He has to stay. It's like being the captain of the
He's
ship.
He's going to be in a concrete sandwich.
He's the maybe. A 2008, and of course this was 8 years ago, U.S. Geological Survey report warned that a magnitude 7.8 earthquake on the southern San Andreas Fault would cause more than 1,800 deaths, 50,000 injuries, $200 billion in damage, and severe long-lasting disruptions.
Now, does that cover L.A.? Or further south of L.A.?
Oh, no. It's all along California. I mean, it's from way...
Santa Barbara.
It's way down almost... it's way east of San Diego, but it's down as far as San Diego and up as far as San Francisco. It goes all the way up there. And it's, you know... And a story that I saw a couple months ago, which I sent to my brother in Oregon, said that an earthquake was... imminent within the next 100 or 200 years that would actually lop a chunk off the coast of Oregon and southern Washington.
So it includes San Francisco?
It does. I'm sorry. This is Pat. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Hi. How do you react to this?
Well, I don't know. My daughter lives in San Diego, and she has a place in Palm Springs, too. And she wants me to retire and come out there. But, you know, I worry more about her than my moving there because, let's face it, if you're old enough to retire, you've had a decent life. But, you know, you look at it and go, geez, Liz, I wish you'd move away from there. But she's been there 20 years and loves it and would never come back to Wisconsin winters.
Okay,
So
while your daughter is happy there, and even though she knows she's living on a fault line, she's staying right where she is. You, on the other hand, considering whether or not you stay and enjoy Wisconsin winters or go to California, are kind of thinking about it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to have some second thoughts because who knows? I firmly believe, you know, I understand science enough to firmly believe it's going to happen. It's just when.
Right, and that's what this guy said. The way he said it, the springs on it are wound very, very tight.
You know, and I think putting it that way, and being who he is, make it seem much more imminent and sure than just saying, you know, the San Andreas Fault is out there. It hasn't, you know, done anything in 100 years or 150 years. And, you know, you go, yeah, but, you know, I live here and I like my apartment.
Well, he did refer to the springs being wound very, very tight and the fault is locked, loaded, and ready to go.
I know, and that's very visual.
Right, yeah.
If you know anything about science and how faults occur and that kind of stuff, that's exactly what happens is, you know, the one that had the tsunami, that's exactly what was going on is, you know, it's all lined up ready to go and you don't know when.
Yeah.
We have a big fault
Pat,
in Illinois.
Thanks for the call. Well, that's what Karen's worried about. Karen?
Yeah.
You're worried about what fault?
The New Madrid Fault. It's all over Missouri, Southern Illinois, Kentucky, Southern Indiana. We're Chicago isn't in the epicenter, but we will certainly feel it. And I believe the last time that it, I was going to say erupted, went off, whatever you say, it was in 1800, but there wasn't anyone living, you know.
But it's more in southern Illinois, isn't it?
Yeah, but it's the biggest, deepest one. I mean, I went to Wash U, and my dad, I remember we went to Saks, and my dad said, now, don't try anything on. And, of course, my mom and I were upstairs trying stuff off, and we had an earthquake, and you could just feel the entire building, you know.
Well, I remember an earthquake here many years ago. It occurred just before 5 o'clock in the morning because I had woken early and was listening to Steve and Johnny, and all of a sudden I thought one of the cats had jumped up on the bed because the bed kind of shook for a second, and I thought, well, that was weird. And within five minutes, they had reports of an earthquake.
Exactly. There was one in 1987. I know because I was sitting next to Studs Terkel. We were a group of us.
You
name dropper.
We were lucky to...
I know, I can't help it. It was so much fun, though. You should have been on the bus when he and Judge Abraham
Lincoln Meravitz.
It was like a show, and the entire bus was at the back listening to them because Studs didn't drive. I mean, it was an amazing thing. He was an amazing man. But anyway, and it was like I felt the table, and I said, there's an earthquake. And everyone looked at me and like they're laughing and mocking me. And sure enough,
it was an earthquake. All right.
It's always good to be right about those earthquakes.
There you go. Karen.
Hey, it's good to be right about anything.
Thanks for the call. Back to your calls and texts at 312-981-7200. We're talking about a story this week. The director of the Southern California Earthquake Center said the San Andreas Fault is locked, loaded, and ready to go, that its springs are wound very tight. And I just wondered if that would affect anybody's decision to move out in that neighborhood or even to visit.
Answer your question.
What question?
Would it affect yours?
Probably not.
No?
No. I mean, I moved for the last time.
But were you to move?
Right. Would that affect my decision?
Would that affect your decision?
No. No, but it would affect Danny's, right, Danny?
Wouldn't affect my decision whatsoever.
Oh, it says I would never move out there.
Well, I wouldn't. No, actually, I've got relatives out there that have invited me to move 1,001 times, and I just won't because I'm poor.
Okay, so it's not about earthquakes.
Well, I shouldn't say I'm poor. I'm cheap.
Are you related to Ron?
No, I'm not a pain in the ass.
Oh, okay. Prove it.
If you worry about everything, I mean, you've got the San Andreas Fault. You've got the fault there in St. Louis, you know, there in southern Illinois. You've got the caldera there in Yellowstone.
Yeah, right. So you're in the something's going to get all of us camp.
Yeah, and then you got dogs and cats living together in the East Coast. You know, it's like the world's gonna end. Oh, yeah, you know, dogs and cats living together, mass chaos, end of the world.
So you're an apocalypse kind of guy.
Well, you know, you're going to go at some point.
Right.
I mean, what does it matter? You know,
I want to go by myself and not with thousands of others.
Really? Screaming and crying?
Well, I live in Milwaukee, which I figure is a perfect spot because it's a first strike target if there's ever a nuclear war.
Uh-huh.
I just want to be able to sit on my front porch and go, well, they did it, and then poof, be gone. And so that's my attitude.
Okay, so you're a little bit of a fatalist, but I share your attitude. Something's going to get all of us, so why not an earthquake? Why not a nuclear attack? Why not a terrorist attack? You know, why not a bus?
If you live your life in fear, you're never going to have any fun.
There you go. All right, what are you doing for fun this weekend, Danny?
Actually, I'm doing Summerfest and all the other stuff like that.
Sounds like you're really going to mess up the median age at Summerfest.
Well, I'm a professional musician.
Oh, okay.
So I'm actually performing there this weekend.
Okay, what's your name of the band?
Actually, I'm working with a couple of them. The main one is a band called Reverend Raven and the Chainsmoking Altar Boys.
Hey!
What are you, a drummer?
No, actually, I'm a keyboard player.
Okay. So, Redland what?
Reverend?
Reverend Raven and a Chainsmoking Altar Boys.
All right. We'll see if we can't find... Is there music online?
Oh, yeah. We're actually one of the Midwest top blues bands.
All right, we're going to try and track that down and listen to your keyboard work.
Do you have one you recommend?
Yeah, what song would we hear your keyboard work on?
Oh, gosh, there's tons of them.
Well, pick one.
Gosh, I would say, I'm just trying to think of one of the good ones. Shoot, what's the name of the darn song now?
Welcome to our world.
Yeah, I know, boy.
What about My Life?
That would be actually a decent one.
All right. Okay. All right, we're gonna find one of the songs. You're a musician and you're up at noon?
Well,
Don't you read the rule book?
Well, I just woke up.
Oh, okay. Okay.
You missed a great show.
You did.
No, I heard a little bit of it earlier.
Okay. Danny, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye. We're going to look for some of Danny's music. In the meantime, this is Anne. You don't want to hang out with her. Anne?
No.
What's your history?
Well, I was in an earthquake in California, in Oakland, in 1957. I just brought my first son home from the hospital.
How big an earthquake was it?
It was 7.6.
How much did the baby weigh?
It was shaking like you can't believe.
Okay, so you've been in an earthquake. What other natural disasters?
Tornado here in Illinois. It took all the shingles off my roof on Ela Road in Palatine back, and I can't remember what year that was.
Okay, so you've been in an earthquake and a tornado.
And I've been in a hurricane in Washington, D.C. in the 50s.
Wow.
Stay away from Anne.
What's next?
Yeah, I was out working in it, and we found shelter in a garage, a lady's garage.
Wow. Well, we're glad you're okay, but we don't want to hang out with you, okay?
I'm just fine.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm 81 years old now.
Wow. You've lived an interesting life.
Yes,
Anne,
I have.
Thanks for the call.
Okay, you're welcome.
This is Karen with an earthquake joke. Karen, let's hear your earthquake joke.
Okay. My earthquake
Karen?
Joke
is... Oh, is this our...
There?
Hold off on the music a second while we do the earthquake joke. Yeah, Karen, what's your earthquake joke?
There we go. Can you guys hear me?
We can.
Okay, good. My joke is, how do we know who to blame for all the earthquakes in California?
I don't know.
We give up.
It's San Andreas' fault.
Thank you, Karen.
What do you think? You like that?
Yeah, we do. That's great. Thanks.
Before you let me go, is that Kristen Decker that keeps coming on?
Yes, that's Kristen Decker.
Hi.
Oh, hi. I just wanted to tell you that I'm a longtime listener of Bill and Wendy, and Wendy was talking about how sometimes it's awkward to ask people to get together, you know, and things like that. But she said that she would really love to go shopping with you, but she's awkward about approaching you.
Did you hear that, Kristen?
I heard that. Thank you so much, Karen. I will talk to Wendy, and we are going to go shopping because I am the best person to go shopping with.
There you go. We'll be back after this. Bye.
This is Reverend Raven and the Chain Smoking Altar Boys performing at Summerfest this weekend.
And what was our girlfriend's name? I can't remember. Who was in the band?
I don't remember.
Oh, man, that short-term memory crap. Anyway, there you go. Thank you for the call.
You're just
and
like
thank
Dory.
You for the. I'm sorry?
You have a short-term memory problem like Dory.
I know. And like me.